Life in the city has its share of strange and dangerous things. But at least in more populous areas, there is the expectation of the unusual, and a tolerance of the unorthodox. And acts of aggression or sedition are met with swift resolve in the strange find good company. But the city is not the province of the truly bizarre. The weirdest things brew where people have room to roam, under the cover of solitude, into the nooks and crannies that are tucked down too deeply into the landscape, into areas too secluded for the light of day to shine, or the influence of social norm to affect, or the long arm of the law to reach. This is a place where the expectation of consequence and the fear of retribution are unknown. This is where the schemers hide, the occultists practice, and the psychotic take refuge. This is where the overly curious do weird things, and the eccentric know no bounds. This is where the drifters wind up, where the addicts squat in abandoned land, or in silos, or even underground in hidden bunkers. This is where things that are oftentimes too bizarre or repulsive to believe can and do take place. Prepare your mind and join me in a journey into those hidden away places I like to call the Devil's Playground. Gelatophobia, Part 11. I decided to celebrate a little. This had been too easy. I made a pitcher of my favorite elixir and made myself a couple of sandwiches, grabbed a bag of chips, piled a plate of snacks for Jupiter, and headed upstairs to work on my speech to Pearson. It took me the remainder of the day and most of the night to get it all down, but I had a couple of pages of good material by the end of the night. The sounds of Jupiter crunching his snacks comforted me as I wrote. The next morning, I stood in front of the mirror in my mask and my black turtleneck, worn jeans and combat boots, and began to practice my speech. It didn't matter what point of entry I chose into his home. What mattered the most was the timing of my entry and my preparedness to pounce. But I ultimately decided to enter from the back door. I needed to make sure that Pearson wouldn't try anything funny, like pressing a button to set off an alarm, or accessing some sort of app on his watch or his phone to send out a distress signal. That's where my taser gun would come in handy. I was going to nail him as soon as I saw him, for just long enough to tie him up. And then, I was going to deliver my speech to him. And then, and only then, I was going to rip out those eyes. I was having second thoughts about that. Was that really necessary? My powers of reason were beckoning me to reconsider. All I really wanted to do was to scare him, to make sure that he knew not to mess with me. But I knew that if I tied him up, and if I delivered my speech in my mask, and then I set him free, surely he would contact the authorities and have me locked up, unless I did something to keep him quiet. But what would that be? In other words, what was my endgame going to be here? I really didn't know, because the consequences of my actions with Pearson weren't nearly as important to me as speaking my mind was to him. I mean, this was a breakthrough for me.
and I'm already in a prison within a prison. If I could speak my mind to him, I could be released from two prisons. And if that meant that I went to another one, and that's just one where I'm around other people. Here, I'm in two prisons alone. So I think that's a pretty good trade-off. So I spent more time watching him, documenting his every move from my window. And I spent time practicing in front of the mirror at night and early in the morning. I fueled my obsession with copious amounts of my elixir. I was consuming it at such a fast rate that in a short window of clarity one morning, I ordered another case of whiskey. But it brought me such great insight. And between the plotting and the note-taking and the mirror practicing, I felt ready. I felt ready, and I gathered my tools, my weapons, my instruments of choice, and I donned my mask, and I waited. I waited there by the window. I waited until it was time. Pearson wouldn't know what hit him. And when he finally did realize it, he would be so entangled in the spider's web, so tightly entangled, his legs, his arms, and head immobilized, that all he would be able to do would be to listen and to learn how to treat people. ...4:45 came. The sprinklers went off outside. Pearson emerged, like clockwork. I slid out the back door, crossed through my backyard toward his back door, and into his house.
Visit us directly online at thedevilsplaygroundshow.com. Subscribe to the Devil's Playground podcast to stay tuned at anchor.fm/thedevilsplayground. And visit our merchandise store at tinyurl.com/thedevilsplaygroundstore. You've been listening to The Devil's Playground.